That lass on Radio 4 who's sort of Charlotte Green, she's got nothing on me.
Do you look into their eyes, Ian, or is that too personal a question? You don't want to go into this.
What would you be shouting at the television screen, Ian Lennox?
I can't proofread that.
But there is a slight suggestion that next season might be better. So.
Let's hope so.
No one seems to get a penalty for pulling shirts nowadays, or hardly ever.
Or Seven Simple Seasons.
See what
you
did there?
Yeah. Yes, like so. It.
Fly Me to the Moon, the audio podcast companion with Rob Nichols.
Well, he's back. I didn't think I'd say those words because I felt he was going to spend at least a season celebrating the fact that he won the Fly Me to the Moon Euro Predictor Challenge by a startling 7 points, having correctly identified it was going to be a one-all draw between England and Italy in the final game. Ian Lennox, welcome back to Fly Me to the Moon. How does it feel to be a champion in the tune?
Champion, man. That's right. At least I won something. There's not many casting of sights of always going to say the same thing.
Well, I don't know. I mean, you know, the season has started so far with a couple of goals, no points, and of course, lots of love for VAR, which is nice. So great stuff there. I can appreciate you obviously feeling the same way as Steve Bruce would have felt over the VAR challenge and scenario there, that 1 week they're given, another week they're not. In both cases, we just have a laugh at Newcastle's expense. What the hey? clearly, we're waiting for Rob Nichols to actually come on board. It is, after all, his show, Fly Me to the Moon, the podcast edition. George Conway is with us, though. George, welcome back to your first one of the season proper. You gave, of course, an interesting sort of prediction in terms of the second one of the season proper. So an interesting prediction for Borough's results so far. I suppose you could say mid-table mediocrity is where we sit. But what are your thoughts on how things have been progressing with the lads from the Riverside?
It's been interesting so far. I think we've looked good in flashes. I think some players are stepping up to mark. Isaiah Jones looking very, very good. I'm hoping he can sort of, you know, push on a build. But again, some new signings needing a bit more time to sort of fit in and gel. You know, Martin Piero needs a little bit more time and just needs to get used to really the style of, you know, England and especially Neil Warnock before hopefully he can show his, you know, his quality.
Well, and Ian Warnock's certainly been quite busy. We see the departure of Chuba Akpom, who's actually rejoined PAOK on a season-long loan deal. But at the same time as that actually happens, there's a new arrival, of course, with ex-Wimbledon striker Toyosi Olusanya, who's come along on a two-year contract. And it does seem as though Neil Warnock is quite excited about the former AFC Wimbledon striker and indeed non-leaguer Toyosi Olusanya. I mean, too early to tell, but George, do you feel this is good, or would you have liked to have put in a bid, a last-minute bid perhaps, to persuade the Daniel Levy's of the world that Harry Kane should have actually joined Borough at the end in a shock move?
No, I'm quite happy with the business. Chuba Akpom leaving is probably good for both him and the club, really. He's not performed since he arrived. And there was a lot of hype about him and it just didn't settle properly. Neil Warnock said he, you know, whenever he played him, he didn't hit form. He didn't, you know, he just didn't produce what he was supposed to. And it was a real shame because I was, you know, it was quite excited. Maybe, you know, bringing in an actual goal scorer. But it looks like hopefully the new lad might be able to do a little bit, especially with Uche up front as well.
Yeah, exactly. Piaggio looking in good form. Rob has arrived. He's in the building. He's getting his final massage. He's going to be sorted out in a few seconds. But I couldn't resist from the last edition of the paper version of Fly Me to the Moon, this one. Ian, you'd appreciate this. Stan played 16 top flight games before manager Joe Harvey unexpectedly called him in to say that the club wanted to accept an offer of £11,000 from Middlesbrough for him to go as player coach. Stan is candid that I didn't want to go to Essen Park, but he did. Written by the Rochdale Smoggy. But which Stan do you think he's referring to, Ian Lennox?
It's not Stan Anderson.
There we are. You see, Rob nodding. Say, why would you say it's not Stan Anderson, Ian?
Because Stan Anderson was came from Middlesbrough to Newcastle originally. Was it from Sunderland?
Yeah, from Sunderland.
Ah,
yeah.
Right, okay.
It's the great quiz question, isn't he? That the player that captained
all three, didn't he?
Yeah, and captained them all as well.
Yeah, I actually interviewed him briefly when he came up to Newcastle, Stan Anderson. I was a kid reporter. I liked him a lot. Yeah. He's a very cultured footballer. And he's a very good passer of the ball. I think he played for England a few times as well, didn't he?
He did. And he went to the 1962 World Cup. And that is the way that he liked to play football when he was a manager as well. He soon took over as manager when Middlesbrough were in the real doldrums, dropping down into the third division, and rescued us, brought us back. But he liked to play football, and sometimes that led to clashes with people who wanted just hoof the ball upfield.
Don't let them panic into playing football.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I'm very impressed, Rob, with that wonderful interpretation there of Thomas Tuchel, the Chelsea manager. But never mind, it's a different area to explore. Okay, Rob, into Fly Me to the Moon now. We've just been talking with George there about current changes and how Tuba has actually gone, Tuba Akbom. But coming into play, of course, we have the wonderful Wimbledon striker who already, I think, George hasn't been salivating about the sort of possibility, but looks good for Tiosi Olusanya, who himself has actually said he was pinching himself. He thought he might have actually been called by a Division 1 or Division 2 side, but to go to the Championship, I think he's on cloud nine, which is good stuff. Your thoughts and Neil Warnock's thoughts, perhaps equally as importantly, Rob, in terms of the changing things as we kind of approach the first international break in a position of mid-table sort of, dare I say, mediocrity again? I just have. What the heck?
You have. Yeah, I think it really, it depends what business we do next week in many respects. We were very, very understrength team going into these first few games. Tavernier is only just fit again. Watmore has been out for most of the first few games. Bowler wasn't match fit for the first game, but there was no other left back at the club that wasn't either injured or had COVID, which is another matter, of course, because they haven't taken vaccinations, most of the players. But yeah,
really?
I think it's astonishing. Good. But so I think with all those things in mind, if we do manage to add a couple of players next week before the transfer window finishes, then and if we could possibly beat Blackburn, then it would be we wouldn't be too displeased. But that's the two big ifs, aren't there? Especially probably beating Blackburn, because we've got a pretty poor record against them home and away.
Armstrong's gone now, so
he has gone. Yeah.
But it sounds like most of your players are going off to play for Florida.
Interesting point, Ian, because just as we had a bonus in the last Fly Me to the Moon podcast, where we had former England winger Trevor Stephen joining us, we actually have a bonus feature with Olympic gold winning medalist Matthew Richards, who's joining us after the programme today. And Matthew, as you'll hear, is somebody who was part of the, successful Great British swimming team, only 0.03 seconds away from the all-time greatest record for the 4x400. But I do raise the point about vaccination. Of course, there's no way in Hades he would have been allowed anywhere near the British Olympic team without vaccination. And I share Ian's incredulity that you've got players, professional footballers, who surely the vaccination should have been a matter of course. I mean, George, are you surprised at the notion of, I mean, it's not just obviously Middlesbrough, it's other clubs as well, and players who, you know, their livelihood depends on obviously their health, and they're hesitant to get the vaccine.
Tell you what, they ought to go and talk to some of the Newcastle players who got long COVID, and you could tell them what they've had to put up with. And there would be a queue to get the vaccination if they had that information, because it's been horrendous. Last season at Newcastle, there was one of the main players was out for weeks, and he was very ill.
George,
it's quite a surprise that, you know, athletes aren't getting the vaccination. You know, like you said, obviously they're relying on their health for, you know, the living. It's quite strange, but you know, each to their own, I guess. If they don't want to get it, they don't want to get it, and it's their choice.
It isn't each to their own, though, is it? Because the other people have got to share their dressing room with them, and they're going to, they're like more likely to catch it. I mean, if you have a double vaccination, you can still get it, albeit it's certainly milder.
Do you mean like 72-year-old Neil Warnock, the manager, who's had COVID over a year ago, and he's been going on about it whenever he can about the players, and he's been talking about their irresponsibility if they have to visit grandparents. But I'm sure he's also thinking about his own health and his own coaches. The EFL have ruled that all the pitches have to be red zones to protect the players from the fans, but it's the other way around. It's threatening to the other way around.
If I was the Middlesbrough manager, I'm afraid I would just say you're not getting paid until you have the damn things.
Can't do that, though, can you?
George, you don't have to answer this, but just out of interest, have you had the vaccine as yet?
Yeah, I've had both.
There we are, you see. So a fully vaccinated Fly Me to the Moon team, which is nice. That's why we're in Zoom. Yeah. Of course, good news, Rob, is that Middlesbrough do have 5 points more than Newcastle United at this stage of the season. So that's good from that point of view. I just wanted to raise that in terms of that. And of course, only 3 points away from the playoffs and so on. In general, Rob, let's cast our mind back over some of the fixtures so far. Was it a case of, well, we were all basically singing with joy and happiness with the 2-1 result at our last home game against Bristol City, as correctly predicted, it has to be said, by your good self, Rob Nichols, and Jenny Finch, our other Newcastle soul? So reverse the score. That's one of the reasons why, obviously, Jenny Bill has obviously been in disgrace for today, but she will return, I've no doubt. After that 2-1 result, we had the EFL Cup. Before that, we had the EFL thing.
Disaster.
We had the QPR scenario. I mean, and I can only refer to it as the QPR scenario. Middlesbrough take the lead, and it ends up Middlesbrough 2, Queen's Park Rangers 3.
Yeah, I think we might have alluded to the fact that QPR, obviously, the teams that are very much the favourites to go up, I'm sure George would agree, are the teams that have come down and the teams that have got parachute payments left over. QPR are probably at the top, are probably also well fancied. And I think that was proven by that game, because even they were down to 10 men and we equalised. And then everyone would think at that point the momentum's with us, but they came back and attacked us and scored. There were poor goals to all the three goals were really poor goals that we conceded. But I thought QPR showed a lot of attacking intent, and that said a lot for the fact that you're down to 10 men and you've been pegged back, but you still go up the other end and score. So it was a big disappointment. And mind you, we'll have to learn some lessons, because there was two occasions in the second half for QPR where they were actually down to 9 men, because the substitute, two players went off injured. The substitute was not ready to come on, and that we should have punished them for that. It's unbelievable, really. But yeah, that was a disappointment. Obviously, Blackpool was terrible to lose. I don't think we wanted to be in the League Cup any longer than we could be. Yeah. It was also making the point, wasn't it, that our second choice 11 was nothing like as good as even Blackpool's that's just been promoted. And then we went to Derby, Alex, and we drew 0-0 at Derby. Some good saves by the keeper, who was making a point that his lapse at home was just one lapse, and he was rightly applauded for the performance. And I thought as that game went on, there would only be one winner. And I think Derby have started better than we thought they would, but I think they're going to struggle like mad as time progresses, as their thin squad gets really tested and challenged. So, yeah, would have liked to have won that, but you'd always settle for a draw away from home, especially if we could now beat Blackburn Rovers.
Derby, of course.
What sort of crowds are you getting? What sort of crowds are you getting at Middlesbrough now?
I'm going to have a comparison with Newcastle. we're getting 22,000, that sort of thing. And we were the fourth. We had the fourth highest amount of fans travelling to Derby, you know, for an away thing. So we're still well supported away from home. Yeah, so Yeah, the crowd's been okay because it's been interesting. You should make that point, Ian, because Blackburn only got 10,000 for their first game of the season, and you do wonder whether some people there's two sort of schools of thought of supporters going back. Some people who are really, really well, everyone's excited, but you've got one lot of supporters who are very cautious with linked to COVID. I just heard this week that Cardiff City are doing a fantastic thing. Where upper tier of their stand, they're opening it for social distanced supporters that can sit, season ticket holders that can sit there that would normally have season tickets anywhere in their stadium. They can sit socially distant up there, completely separate from the rest of the crowd. But that's an interesting thought going forward. But yeah, you've got two sets of fans, one set that just really, really into it. And there's no distancing whatsoever. They're jumping around like mad in the concourses. And then you've got another set of fans who are not going because of it, and some of them that are cautious. And we've just doing a questionnaire at the moment for fans. We've had 150 respondents so far, and it's very interesting. You can see the two sets of figures coming through. It's half 50% think they're safe, 50% don't think they're safe, etc. So. Let's just turn to
George as a young supporter. George, I was just about to mention Wayne Rooney, of course, who was the manager of Derby County and, of course, known for everything that Ronaldo does. If you look after yourself, Wayne, that's what I say. You could have been still playing like Ronaldo if you'd looked after yourself. That's all I say. Anyway, George, what are your thoughts on Rob's line there, re-supporters and concerns?
I think it's interesting. I mean, myself as a fan personally, even though I am double jab, I don't feel comfortable to attend a game as of yet. I don't think it's a wholly safe environment, especially with people turning down, refusing to get the vaccine, and especially with unvaccinated players. It's quite tricky to, you know, not want to go. I'm a vulnerable person, so if I got it, it wouldn't be. Despite the two vaccinations, it wouldn't be that good. So it's an interesting one. I think I attended one game during with football suspended as a reporter.
Yeah.
And I felt everything was socially distanced. Everybody was wearing masks. Even then, I felt uncomfortable. So right. I don't think it's something that I would personally attend this season until, you know, maybe players are actually vaccinated, because it's quite scary to think, really, that, you know, they can come towards you and you can't control it.
Would it make you feel safer if other clubs did what I think Cardiff have actually got the luxury of a stand that's only half open, a bit like Sunderland, really. They've got like an upper deck that's not usually open. Would that make you feel safer? And and also what they're announcing at most clubs nowadays is that please stay behind as long as you want and leave after the crowd. Would that possibly influence you, coax you back if you thought you were sitting like really spaced out and there was no one else, or would you still feel worried about the way going into the game and coming out of the game?
It depends how isolated you are, I think, from the other people. Is it a whole separate concourse, or is the concourse or all the courses linked where people can just sort of walk through as they fancy and, you know, end up sitting in an area that actually, you know, people don't want them to sit in, but they are anyway. So it's quite a tricky sort of scenario, I think, at the moment. It'd be nice to see some clubs putting in some social distancing stands, like, say, Cardiff have done, but I'm not sure how good the restrictions are on that in terms of sort of people be able to move freely within the stadium.
Yeah.
I think one of the main problems would be actually using public transport to get to and from the game. Bus journeys and the trains and things. When I went to see the game on Tuesday, and it's only a couple of miles from me, but the guy in front of me was sitting in the seat coughing away. And I didn't like it, you know.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Ian. I just, you know, again, you have my sympathies, but so what was your experience? Was that your first experience of live football, literally just a few nights ago?
Yes. Yes, for about 18 months, 2 years. That's the first time I've been to Newcastle, St James's Park, well before the COVID started, anyway. Yeah.
And again, the sort of same questions. How did you find the experience?
I enjoyed the game, actually. It was a very good goalless draw. I was particularly interested to see how Sean Longstaff was going to play, because when I saw him play 2 years ago, and I thought he was potentially a future England player, and he got a bad injury and never been the same, but he looks like he's getting, he showed signs of getting back to his, to a much higher standard than he was the previous season, despite one of the local papers having him down, I think it gave him 4 marks out of 10. I don't know where, I think he was watching the game from the car park, that bloke. It's the total difference of watching a game of football from a very good seat, which I had, and seeing all the stuff that's going on off the ball, and you can't see it on television. You can't see the runs that have been made, and you can't really understand what's happening on the pitch. But when you're watching a television game, because you just can't see enough of the pitch, and to realise how clever some of the players were when they make themselves available, passes and. As soon as they got rid of the ball, they're moving into space to make themselves available and this sort of thing. And others who weren't, you know, it's absolutely crucial difference between different players, you know. I found it very interesting.
I noticed Ian, you fails to actually reveal the fact that although it was 0-0 at the end of full time, Burnley did actually win 4-3 on penalties. So Newcastle any particular success.
Alex, it wasn't the worst result in the world for us. We weren't going to win the cup, and it's much more important that we stay in the league. We'll have some problems, same as we did last two seasons, about doing that. There's no money to spend, apparently. We're trying to get players on loan.
You've signed an Arsenal player, so all's well with the world. And Ian, much as we love your moans about Newcastle, this is the Flyers of the Moon official Middlesbrough podcast. So let's move back to Rob again. Let's talk Blackburn Rovers. Let's go Blackburn on to Rovers, Blackburn Rovers.
Blackburn Rovers means Tony Mowbray coming back, Alex. And obviously, the fanzine Fly Me to the Moon is named in honour of Tony Mowbray about the going back to, if people don't remember, and a lot of people like George weren't born at the time, going back to the 80s when Bruce Rioch said if he had to go to the moon, he would like Tony Mowbray by his side. And I think he followed that by saying he's a magnificent man. And Mowbray was an absolute legend as a captain, the captain of that team in the 80s, the late 80s. And it's always a fantastic occasion when we welcome him back to the Riverside. We mentioned Stan Anderson. There's a link from Stan Anderson to Tony. Last time I spoke to Stan Anderson, Tony Mowbray was the manager and at Borough, and they're both, the late Stan Anderson, just like Tony Mowbray now, they've got like a certain philosophy in the way that they want to play football, and they want to keep the ball on the pitch, and they want it to be which is. It's interesting, isn't it? Because Mowbray was a defender, and people would have thought that his ethos at all. But that's the way he likes to play it, and it'll be interesting because there'll be a clash of styles tomorrow. Not that I don't. Obviously, Warnock's collecting quite a few big physical players. Matt Crooks is about 6'5" in midfield.
It's unusual for Neil Warnock, isn't it? Big physical players.
Of course, you mentioned before, and George has mentioned this as well, that we've had a young winger called Isaiah Jones who's just been playing absolutely brilliantly, and he plays without any sort of fear. He takes on his fullback. He can go inside and outside. He's come from nowhere, and he was actually a school friend of Toyosi, who we've just signed, who's also a left winger. Wants to be called T. So I think straight away is going to be the nickname Mr. T from the A team.
On that basis, in a week in which we've already had the singer Kanye West now wishes to refer to himself as Ye, then obviously T T has gone one letter further, which is fantastic.
Yes.
T. There's no truth in the rumour that Ian will henceforth wish to be referred to as I, and George probably just...
I will not.
So George, clearly, although Blackburn have obviously signed Ian Poveda from Leeds United, I think the fact that the hoodoo against Bristol City was smashed by your prediction of Middlesbrough 2, Bristol City 1. What's your prediction for Borough versus Blackburn Rovers?
Well, Blackburn haven't lost away to us since 2012, when Mowbray was manager for us and we won 1-0. Middlesbrough have only won 3 of the last 23 games against Blackburn in the league. I don't want to be a pessimist. I don't like being a pessimist. But I'm going to be a pessimist. 2-1, Blackburn.
Wow. Not a good sort of launch into the international break. Ian, I mean, as you know, obviously as a self-confessed and identified Newcastle United supporter, well, we like to have a little bit of roughage in. It's better than the team that are currently doing quite well in Division One. What's your thoughts on Borough versus Blackburn?
I shall go, my heart shall rule my head, I shall say. It'll be 1-1.
And Rob, you've heard some of those particular thoughts. Are you going to sort of change things around and say that obviously we'll have both those wingers flying in the crosses? Ekpiezu is on fire. George already predicted Matty Crook's going to be on the score sheet. It's going to be a 3-0 victory for Borough.
2-0 victory, Alex. It'll be 2-0. So, yeah, those records are there to be changed, aren't they? And that's what's going to happen. And I think Duncan Watmore will play a big part tomorrow. We've been waiting for him to come back. And Tavernier as well will make an impact and we'll win 2-0.
From the slightly sad news department, it's worthwhile noting that we send our best wishes to Alan Peacock, of course, who has confirmed that he's got Alzheimer's and dementia. That's news that came out from that point of view. Again, possibly, as indeed he was centre-forward, Rob, it adds to the campaign and the clamour for ensuring that more medical study is done into the dangers of heading the ball.
Yeah, without a doubt. I think there was a ruling, wasn't there, at the start of the season that at all levels of football, they're going to now control the amount of heading that's done in training, which was clearly a very, very big issue in the 60s and the 70s. I think it's just daily, it almost seems daily that we hear about somebody, some personality. It was Tay McDermott, wasn't it, just before that, the personality that from the football world that's been affected by dementia. And the link seems to be so tangible now that we've got to do something about it. Very sad to hear about Alan. I've known Alan for years. Great character. And wish him all the best and his family.
Mm. Absolutely. And in terms of publications, again, we promised Kadeem that we'd mention this. So we'll say again, that should have been at the top is available as well. Presumably, again, you can access this through a variety of things. And also, Rob, you're best suited to actually say, how can people get hold of a copy of Kadeem Hussain's latest poetry collection, Should Have Been at the Top?
Well, I believe he is negotiating, as we speak almost, a launch of the book at Basecamp, which is a venue near the train station at the old postal sorting office, and that will be for the Blackpool before the Blackpool game, which is the 18th of September. So that might be your best bet, because then you can he'll read some poems there, and he will sign you a copy. And talking of Basecamp, I'll be down at Basecamp tomorrow before the match. It's Exchange Square, Exchange Place, just near the railway station, where we have put together this week a film, sort of film footage and photos of Tony Mowbray, sort of like sort of in honour of the legend. So anyone who's going down there, you will see this big sort of slideshow on Tony Mowbray just before we beat his team.
Yeah, and if you're listening to this on a Saturday, don't forget, tomorrow is today. So that's important. Whenever you're tuning in on that, don't forget you can also access us as well as the Southside Broadcasting.podbean.com site. Simply go to redarmy.tv and you can find the whole system there on Red Army Radio. We mentioned obviously Kadeem's book. Let's not forget Ian is a fully published author who's produced a whole wealth of texts and various other bits and pieces. Ian, I shall just, I mean, rather than actually choose one, which I could easily do, but what would you recommend people should go for if they wanted to actually start getting insight into the mind of this Newcastle United follower and indeed FMTTM Euro predictor champion of yourself?
Well, the one I'm most pleased with at the moment is my last book, which is called Marley's Weapon. Well, it's set in the 60s in a newspaper office, and it's part of an era that I lived through as a young man. And I think, you know, I've written 7 books now, and there's a book called The Brothers, which is the second book that I wrote. And everyone was saying that was the best book I'd done. And I was hoping, that, as I'm getting old now, I thought this might be the last book I've written. So
no.
I wanted to come in that sort of. I know I'm going to try and write another one actually. But at the time of writing, I was thinking that I must try and make this one at least as good as The Brothers, and I think we're somewhere certainly near it anyway in quality. It's different sort of book altogether, but I thought it was quite a decent book.
It's outstanding, Ian, and for people that. So many of us, brought up watching The Likely Lads, and it's kind of that era in some respects. Yeah,
I'd even go so far as to say, Ian, that I'd probably recommend it to any final year sports journalism students at the University of Lincoln who wish to have a little bit of light reading before they actually take a module called Communications and Public Relations in Sport with a certain member of this team starting in October, where we probably won't be socially distanced. So it's great stuff. We'll see each other in person, George. Amazing. At least we've both been double jabbed. That's the important thing. Moving on from that point of view, Rob, finally, how can people actually subscribe to Fly Me to the Moon, the magazine?
Yes, the fanzine. Yes, if they go to the website fmttmborough.com and click on subscribe, or there's also a fanzine shop there as well. I think that's probably the easiest way at the moment, because column me at Basecamp, I suppose, because I'm going to be there before every game. But I think I will actually sell the fanzine before the Blackpool game, which is the next issue. I will actually stand in my normal place because people ask me to. So I wasn't sure people wanted me to, so I will. Yeah.
There you go. And we'll be back after the international break. We haven't really spoken about England, really. Any thoughts on the upcoming games? Or is it just a case of after the excitement of the European Championships, somehow Hungary, it's not the same? I mean, George, what are you looking forward to? I mean, we've obviously got Patrick Bamford in the side again.
Thought that was an odd choice. Was hoping to see someone like Danny Ings. Just think he's a better goal scorer, he's better on the ball, and he's more physical going forward. Bamford had one decent season in the Premier League, so it would have been nice to see a solid Premier League player getting a go, but it'd be interesting to see what he does, and, you know, maybe he can bag himself a goal or two being third, fourth choice.
Danny Ings has obviously had his chance, hasn't he? And he played well, but I suppose Patrick Bamford hasn't had that opportunity. So, yeah. and he could be one for the future. And he's very good bringing other players into play around him as well, isn't he, Bamford? Ings is just just an absolutely phenomenal goal poacher. It kind of reminds me of Bernie Slaven.
And doubtless Jack Grealish will be saying things to Harry Kane such as, well, you know, it's not my fault you got Daniel Levy as a manager. What the hey? Life continues. George Conway, Ian Lennox and Rob Nichols, fantastic Fly Me to the Moon. We'll be back, Rob, of course, for the next edition in a few weeks' time, of course, post-international break. I mean, whether Ian actually takes part in this, I don't know. I mean, you know those final 7 words. He's a law unto himself. But Rob, would you like to actually lead us out before, of course, we go into this bonus interview with Olympic gold winning medalist, of course, Matthew Richards. We'll be talking about the importance, together with a range of things, of actually getting that vaccination.
Fantastic. Look forward to that. Let's go after three. One, two, three. Come on, Borough.
Come on, Borough. Up the Borough. Come on,
Borough. Well, if you were to actually use as a maxim for life, train hard, race easy, you could say, what wonderful four words they are. What profound statements they've come from. And indeed, they are indeed profound statements, and they come from no less a personage than Olympic winner and champion, Olympic goals champion, the fabulous and unmitigated, huge one and only success story that is Team GB Olympic gold medal winning swimmer, Matt Richards. How are you, Matt?
I'm very good, thank you. That was a cool intro. I like that one.
it's vitally important. And again, it gets even better because we also have, if there was an Olympic sport, he would obviously win the gold medal in every sense of the word. It's Dr. Ranj Singh. How are you, Ranj?
I'm good, Ben. I was wondering if my intro was going to be quite as spectacular.
of course, Ranj. I mean, you know, it has to be. You know, you're one of our staples. It's absolutely vital from that point of view. We'll talk a little bit about the Olympic success in a few moments, but we're really here to talk about that whole importance of, again, getting into those good habits and school, even though there might be people listening to this saying, school a good habit? Ridiculous. It is vital to our well-being. Ranj, just share with us why, as we head towards September once again and the start, of course, of another school year, actually going to school is a really important aspect for all our fellow human beings on the planet.
Absolutely. So as we sort of, as a nation, I think, enter a phase of trying to live with COVID and minimize its impact, whilst protecting people as much as possible, whilst we get back to normal life, part of that is going to be getting children and young people back into education. We know it's the best place for them, for their education, their physical health and their mental well-being as well. But things are going to be a little bit different. Obviously, there's going to be less restrictions this time around, more freedom to interact with each other, which a lot of kids and young people are looking forward to. But there will still be certain recommendations in place to try and keep people safe. For example, hand washing, ventilation of learning spaces, cleaning regimes will be enhanced. And also certain groups are going to be advised to test asymptomatically with lateral flow or rapid tests. For example, all education staff, secondary school pupils and college pupils. And the idea behind that is to identify any asymptomatic cases as soon as possible and act on that accordingly. But if anyone has symptoms, obviously they need to be getting a PCR test and isolating much like anybody else.
Yeah. Now, Matt, from your own experience in Tokyo, a very testing one, obviously, this was something which, I mean, I looked at the kind of processes that you guys had to go through and it was phenomenal, but it was worth it in the end. I mean, that's the key point, that it is worth getting tested just to make sure that we're all at peak fitness.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think, you know, it's a small price to pay for, you know, the peace of mind of going to school and getting in those educational and sporting environments again without having to worry about potentially the person sat next to you having COVID and you taking that back, you know what I mean? So I think being able to do these tests every morning and not have to pay for them and be able to just have that peace of mind and that one less pressure on people as they do head back to school something I think is a great opportunity for everyone, and I really do hope that people see it the same way. You know, the last year I've been testing multiple times a week, every week. When we were at the Olympics, we had to test a PCR test every morning before we started our day. And that's allowed me to do the things I've done this year. And if I wasn't able to do the testing and follow those procedures, I'm sure I wouldn't have been able to come home with a nice gold shiny thing. So, you know, for me, it's something very close to my heart. And I hope that people, you know, can see that it's in their best interests to get stuck in with that and make it their new routine.
And Matt raises a really interesting point there, Ange, because one of the things I was quite surprised at was the number of Premier League footballers who effectively were testing positive, because they were saying they weren't getting the test. We've actually had this in different other areas down the leagues as well. And I find that very surprising because, I mean, Matt, obviously a Premier athlete, quite clearly going through the tests, etc. Do you think sometimes, you know, maybe messages that come across from certainly different sports, admittedly, you know, we do need to acknowledge that testing is an important part of our day-to-day experiences.
Yes, absolutely. And I think what Matt's just highlighted really well there is that this is not just about a personal responsibility and being able to do the things you want to do, but it's also about protecting those around you and broadly protecting the processes around you. For example, the Olympics. And in this case, when we're talking about schools, it's talking about education and being able to, you know, get all the benefits from that. I agree, some of the messaging and some of the things that we've been seeing in the media around certain sports has been confusing. But the advice is still the same. You know, if you've got symptoms, you isolate, you get a PCR test and you inform your contacts. This is in the context of schools here. And if you're asymptomatically testing, then the recommendation is going to be to do 2 on return to school and then twice weekly. And it's going to be reviewed in future to see if that's the best way to do it. And if you get a positive lateral flow, isolate and get a PCR test. So these measures are in place to keep people as safe as possible and to allow, you know, education and schooling to go ahead with the minimum amount of disruption as possible. The last 18 months has been so difficult on so many fronts for teachers, for pupils, for parents and carers. It's about time we started to put the needs of young people and children who are at relatively low risk from COVID at the forefront and started doing what is best for them and their well-being.
Yeah, absolutely. Matt, it's fair to say that we have lots and lots of Matt Richards fans who would not forgive us if we didn't actually acknowledge the fact that you reached the third fastest time in history. I'll say that again, the third fastest time in history, and we're only 0.03 seconds away from the world record in your gold-winning 4x200-metre freestyle relay. Was it a case of, yeah, as you say, that's why we have that philosophy of train hard, race easy? It was a doddle.
In some respects, yes, absolutely. You know, the racing is the easiest part after the training. But if I told you that I wasn't absolutely terrified, stood behind those blocks about to go in, I would be lying. It was very nerve-wracking. But no, it was an amazing experience. And I was just very lucky to be part of such an amazing group of guys.
A huge congratulations once again with respect to that. I mean, it's an ironic thing, but moving to Bath, was that more water-based sort of city, i.e. Bath, kind of endemic to your sort of success?
Well, you could argue that. I mean, I didn't do any training in the canal or anything, but, moving to Bath was incredible and being in this environment with these guys has been amazing. And, you know, again, it just comes back to the testing, you know, being in such a professional environment. You know, we were told you've got a test, you know, and they explained it to us and said, if you don't, you're putting yourself and the other guys in this squad at risk of missing training. And so, you know, for me, being in this environment and around this team of people was crucial to my success in the summer in the pool.
And is it one of those things where, I would say, we mentioned obviously footballers, we tempted when you saw some of the news stories coming out to shake your head and think, guys, what are you doing? Are you insane?
In some respects you could say yes, you know, but I think there's different cultures in different sports. I think for us, we were very aware of the potential impact that not getting this right with the pandemic could have on our training and our competing. And, you know, it could have been different in football. You know, I've never been a great footballer myself, and I don't know how, you know, their training would have been impacted if they had COVID. So, you know, for them, it could be completely different to us. But, you know, to us, missing 10 days or 2 weeks out of the pool of training would be, you know, a huge, huge hit to our training. So it was just a major, major worry for us and something that we had to manage. And through testing, we were able to do that. And, you know, there was no issues with COVID coming into our training environment in the lead up to the Olympics. And that's something I think we're all very, very proud to be able to say.
And doubtless already gearing up for Paris in 3 years' time. I'm sure it's going to be a wonderful time from that point of view. Ranj, just back to yourself, if people are actually keen to find out, again, some more detail in terms of some of the things we've talked about today, would you point them to the NHS website? Where would you actually suggest they should actually go, just if people want to dig a little bit deeper and actually find out that actually testing is not, you know, as traumatic or as problematic as perhaps you might think it is?
Absolutely. It's definitely not traumatic or problematic, and young people have demonstrated that so far. If you want more information about the changes that are coming and the recommendations, just go to gov.uk/back to school. As always, the NHS website is there for all COVID-related information in general. And if you want to find out what's happening in your local school or educational setting, just pick up the phone and give them a ring and have a chat.
And clearly, Matt, I will obviously recommend anybody should check out mattrichardsswim.co.uk, especially the philosophy side of things. I do like the line, over the years, people have told me that you are too competitive. You don't believe there's any such thing. If you want it, then go for it. Set yourself goals, ambitious ones, and don't stop until you've achieved them. I mean, basically, Matt, that could be seen as, you know, we need you as our next prime minister of the country is all I can say, Matt Richards. That's the bottom line. You know, and I know you're 18, but let's face it, you know, you should be in there from that point of view and go for that.
I think there would be a new one, wouldn't it? You know, youngest prime minister ever.
Yeah, well, you know, let's face it, I don't think you could do a worse job than the current sort of incumbent. I'm not going to go political. That's a different line entirely. For the moment, as we wrap up this particular sequence, just two final questions. They're fairly standard, Ranj. You might remember what they are. Ranj, first of all, have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer with us on the programme today?
Have I had an interesting Zoomer, did you say?
Exactly. It's our kind of our sort of smiley face thing. Has it been okay for you? Has it worked?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's been lovely.
Good. Excellent. And Matt, as you made your debut on Midweek Drive, has the Zoomer been up to spec for your good self?
It has. It's been fantastic. Thank you for having me.
Brilliant. So can we look forward to welcoming you both back in different ways? Will you kindly both return, Dr. Ranj and Matt Richards?
Of course. Yes, absolutely. Yes, anytime. Absolutely.
Excellent. Matt Richards, Olympic gold winning Matt Richards, it has to be said. I mean, probably said lots and lots and lots of times. Huge thanks. And Dr. Ranj, obviously the Olympic gold will be there whenever they introduce the sport of pediatrics into the Olympics.
Let's see what happens.